Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here. Program 170 of the WGN Radio Theater. This is Sunday night. It's April 9th, 2017. And Lisa Wolf, guess what?
What, Carl?
It's our two-year anniversary right now, today.
Yeah, it's not like our two-year anniversary.
No,
it's our two-year anniversary of being at WGN
right.
Radio. It's a little confusing the
way
you
said it. We
don't
have any anniversaries.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Not even a friendship anniversary?
Well, no.
Yeah. Well,
no.
We've known each other about 10 years.
About 10 years.
Wow,
it's like
that's
a decade.
Crazy. Is it about a decade?
About a decade.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm very, very proud to say this show is 2 years old.
It's a milestone today.
It's kind of like crawling and walking. It's about to walk.
So we have some special things in store.
We have a cake.
We've got a special cake.
Carl
did not want me to bake a cake, so I went and got one from the Ritz.
No.
It's almost as good as mine.
There's no hospitals within 5 mile radius of WGN, so that's why I wanted to have a cake.
Actually, there is
by the Ritz Carlton.
We got Northwestern right down the street.
The Ritz Carlton, and I went over there and picked it up.
Yeah, that's from the restaurant called Deca.
Oh, my gosh.
We're going to talk about
that. Can't wait to have a slice of that cake. All right, so that's coming your way. And we're going to talk about our two-year anniversary party at Spin Chicago. We'll talk about that in just a moment. And tonight, it's Gunsmoke with William Conrad, The Halls of Ivy, starring Ronald and Benita Coleman, and then Casey, Crime Photographer, starring Stotts Cotsworth, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming crime film, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Three what? Billboards?
Billboards.
Okay.
Outside Ebbing, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
about a woman who goes to war against the police after her daughter is murdered.
Mm.
And the winner, this is a great prize, a pair of tickets to the Tony Award-winning musical Disney's Mary Poppins, now playing at the Mercury Theater.
That does sound like a great gift.
Yeah, I know how to do it.
Nice.
Right.
All right, the number to call 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor was the star of Kingpin.
There's got to be some way I can work this off, some way I can make it up to you.
All right, who is that actor? 312-981-7200. Give us a call, and we'll find our winner after these words.
This is a WGN Radio Theater two-year anniversary show. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
There's got to be some way I can work this off, some way I can make it up to you.
And we've got Shelby on the line. Hi, Shelby.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. You know what? I just have to tell you, Shelby is one of my all-time favorite names.
Right?
Yep.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I love that name. I've always loved it. I actually wanted to name one of my kids Shelby, but my husband...
Well, you have enough of them.
I got so many, easily. I just can't keep track of them. Yeah. That's a great name.
You needed a hobby when you were younger.
Yeah, I still need one. Shelby, who is that actor?
Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson is exactly right. And you get to go see
Yay.
Mary Poppins. So you get two tickets to the Tony Award-winning musical. This is Disney's Mary Poppins. It's now playing through May 28th at the Mercury Theater Chicago. You can bring your family. You can bring a friend. Spend a jolly holiday with Mary Poppins. Tickets at mercurytheaterchicago.com. Congratulations. We hope you love the show. They do a great job over there at Mercury Theater. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks,
Shelby. All right. Shelby's a big winner.
I know.
Yeah. You like that name. That's a nice name.
Shelby's a great name. I don't know what it is. It just hits me right.
Yeah. All right. Well, guess what? It's time for Gunsmoke. But before we listen to Gunsmoke, I want to remind all of our listeners that we have a special meet and greet. We're going to meet our listeners. We hope that you will come to this. It's April 23rd, and it's absolutely free admission. over at Spin Chicago. We're going to have free hors d'oeuvres for you, too, right?
Hors d'oeuvres.
I mean appetizers.
Appetizers, hors d'oeuvres, hors d'oeuvres pizza. It's all
thing.
Good.
Yeah, and Lisa and I and Mike will be there, and also
Shantae will be there.
And I think some of the other WGN.
We invited everybody, all of the staff at WGN.
Yeah.
We're not sure yet who's coming, who's not, but.
I'm sure some people will be there.
I mean, we'll be there.
Well.
I'm not sure what else you.
Yeah,
you,
and we have.
Need,
we have these publicity photos that we had made. We have one posted, right, on Facebook?
I have
we're
it.
We're
going
to sign
Facebook.
Them to people.
We're going to sign.
We're going to play ping pong.
People were teasing us on Facebook all day that we look like Vanna and Pat. Vanna mm-hmm. White and Pat Sajak. That's funny.
You don't look anything like Pat Sajak.
I know. You're not really looking like Vanna.
Yeah.
But Spin Chicago is a really great place. I want to mention it's owned by Susan Sarandon. Every year, all the Spin locations donate ping pong tables to underserved youth. So in Chicago, they donate tables to Chicago Public Schools, the Chicago Park District. They have weekly parties on Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays. Check them out. They are a fantastic place. It's really hip, really with it, really delicious, and a lot of fun.
And they're going to let us in there?
Can you believe it?
Gosh,
we're
a hip
just,
place like that?
We're trying to be, you know, cool. So we'll see how we do.
Yeah. So it's at 344 North State Street. And this is April 23rd. It's a Sunday. We'll be there for 3 hours, 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. I hope you'll stop in. We're going to be playing ping pong with our listeners. We have these publicity shots to sign to you. And we're going to eat some food together and meet and greet.
We're just going to hang out together.
Celebration, because we've been on the air 2 years right here at WGN, and we're really excited about it, and we're really excited to be over at Spin Chicago, which is a wonderful place.
It's a lot of fun.
All right, it's time now for Gunsmoke. This is from a broadcast date of October 24th, 1952. Gunsmoke was really an adult Western series, Lisa. William Conrad starred as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. Of course, it's best remembered as a television series, but prior to the James Arness TV series, there was a long-running radio series with a completely different cast of characters. William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon on this. Here's part one of The Mortgage on Gunsmoke.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers. And that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
You know, Chester, a morning like this makes a man glad to be alive.
Oh, it's a fine one, all right, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah.
A little nippy, maybe, but just fine.
Indian summer hanging on and winter holding off. You know, Chester, this time of year, I wouldn't trade western Kansas for everything east of the Mississippi. Oh, good. Pedro's got a fire going.
I built the fire, Marshal Dillon.
Oh, good morning, Caleb.
I'm waiting in this jail office for a full 2 hours. What time do you start work, Marshal?
You know Caleb Andrews, don't you, Chester?
Oh, yes, indeed. How are you, Mr. Andrews?
Marshal, I have an order here from the U.S. District Court. I believe it's your job to serve such orders.
Yeah, it is. I don't get them often, though. Yeah. Order of foreclosure and eviction on Ed Blake. Why are you doing this to Ed, Caleb?
The man borrowed money from me. Gave me a mortgage on his farm and household effects. He can't pay it. Why do you think I'm doing it?
Only came due 3 days ago. You sure didn't waste any time.
I'm not interested in your opinions, Marshal Dillon.
Yeah, amount of the mortgage, $420. What do you need with $420? You own half of Ford County now.
Marshal, it's not your place.
You know as well as I do why Ed Blake can't pay this off. His horse rolled on him last spring and broke his leg. And his wife and kid nearly broke their backs trying to get a crop out.
I didn't come here to listen to
you. If you let this ride on through the winter, you'll get your money out of it. But if you go ahead and foreclose now, you'll wipe him out.
Marshal, I already have foreclosed.
You'd break a man for $420 you don't even need, huh?
As I said, your opinions don't interest me. All I expect from you is to serve these papers.
All right, I'll serve them.
You'll notice they're to be served today.
I said I'd serve them. Now get out.
What?
This office belongs to the United States government, and as far as I know, that's one thing you got no mortgage on, so get out.
You may find I have some influence in Washington, Marshal Dillon.
And see if you can get me a decent salary for this rotten job of mine.
It sure was a fine morning, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, it was. All right, Chester, let's saddle up.
This is one job I purely wish we didn't have to do, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah.
My, this sure is a nice farm. Ed and Martha have put in a lot of work here the last 4 years.
We don't have any choice, Chester.
Yes, sir, I know. It's a downright shame, though.
Hey, Marshal!
Oh, boy. Well, hiya, Jimmy.
Look at here what I got, Marshal.
Well, looks to me like a mighty dead coyote.
Sure, that's what it is. He's been killing my chickens, so last night I hid out behind the barn.
Yeah?
I got him with one shot, Mr. Dillon, and there wasn't even a full moon.
Well, that's fine, Jimmy.
Matt Dillon, how are you?
Good morning, Martha.
And Chester, too.
Miss Blake?
Well, I'm glad to see you. Get down, come on in.
Oh, thank you.
Jimmy, now that you showed that thing to Mr. Dillon, take it away somewhere.
All right, Mom. He sure is a big one, ain't he, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, about the biggest I ever saw, Jimmy.
He's real proud of those chickens of his. He's done fine with them. Well, here I am, though, keeping you standing out here in the yard. Come on, let's go inside.
Well, we really can't stay, Martha.
Oh, nonsense. You don't get out here once in a goon's age.
Yeah, I know, but you
and you're just in time. Your favorite dish, Matt. I was about to take it out of the oven when you rode up.
Cornbread. Buttermilk cornbread,
huh? That's right. Ed's not here, but you will stay, won't you?
Well, Martha, I'd like to, but, well, we just can't, that's all. The thing is that, you say Ed's away?
Yes, he's in town. Matt, you're not yourself. What is it?
Well, I suppose I ought to talk to Ed about this, but maybe it'll be better if he hears it from you.
Here's what?
Martha, I got a court order here. It has to do with that mortgage of Caleb Andrews. It's an order of foreclosure and eviction and sale.
No. Oh, no.
Here it is.
We were so sure he'd extend it. He knows what happened, why we couldn't pay it. We were sure he'd extend it.
Well, he won't. I talked to him.
Matt, how long before we have to get out?
5 days.
So soon. You were right, Matt. It is better that Ed hears it from me. Coming on top of everything else, it'll... Well, I can't let it break him. I just can't let it break him.
Martha, if there's anything I can do, you let me know, huh?
Matt, I don't blame you for this. I understand. Well, come on in now and have some cornbread with
us. Well, I couldn't. I'm sorry. Thank you anyway, Martha, but I just couldn't.
Matt, you look low all week.
It's just things in general, Kitty. Sometimes you get to wondering if it's all worth it or not.
The Blakes, huh? Chester was telling me.
Chester talks too much.
It's not your fault, Matt. Somebody had to serve the order.
Somebody has to be hangman, too.
Life's never all good, Matt. There's always a little bad in it.
And my job is more than a little.
Try making your living sometime as a dance hall girl.
Yeah, I guess. But when you gotta go out and boot somebody like the Blakes off their land and out of their home, then you start wondering what's right and what's wrong, and so...
Well, if you find out, Matt, let me know. I've always...
Oh, there you are, Marshal. I stopped by the jail.
Well, all right, Caleb. What's on your mind?
That Blake family, Marshal, they were supposed to vacate today. Well, they haven't done it. I rode by there a little while ago.
According to the court order, they got until sundown.
But they haven't made the slightest preparation to... Marshal, I believe I'd prefer to discuss our business elsewhere than in the presence of this, this...
Easy, Caleb.
Matt, I'll go.
Caleb, you're gonna apologize to Miss Kitty right now.
No.
Apologize? If you think I'm going to apologize to this cheap little baggage who's in this... Hey.
Matt, you shouldn't have done that.
Finnegan, take him outside and throw some water on him.
Yes, sir, Marshal.
Why not, Kitty? He had it coming to him.
He'll do everything he can to hurt you now. He'll take it out on the Blakes, too.
Yeah, maybe. Look, Kitty, I just got an idea. I'll see you later.
All right, Matt.
But, Matt, the mere fact a man runs a bank doesn't always mean he's got a free hand in everything he does. A bank has stockholders, a board of directors. I've got to listen to them.
I think they'd approve the loan, Clem.
Another thing, Caleb Andrews is the biggest account I've got. If I crossed him by taking this loan you suggest, Matt, he'd break me.
I see. All right, Clem, forget it.
Matt, I realize I'm under obligation to you. You saved my life that time the James brothers held me up. Saved the bank, too, in fact. But
that was part of my job, Clem. There's no obligation. I was just asking you as a friend to help out another friend.
Matt, I'd like to do it, but I just can't. Don't you see?
Yeah, sure, Clem. I see. Just forget it.
Gotta think of my wife and the two girls.
Yeah, of course you have.
It's not that I don't want to.
I understand, Clem. I really do. Forget it.
There. That ought to hold it a while. That fire feels kind of good, Mr. Dillon. It's getting chillish out tonight.
Yeah, I guess we better have Pedro lay in some more wood.
Yes, sir. When winter sets in, it always makes you feel good to know you got a warm place to hole up. Be mighty rough not to have a... Not to...
Yeah, I was thinking of the same thing, Chester.
You suppose they... vacated this afternoon?
I don't know. We'll ride out there in the morning and find out.
Sure is a shame. It's just too bad that...
Come in.
Can we bother you, Matt?
Ed! Oh, well, come in, Martha. Well, hiya, Jimmy. Come on up to the stove, folks. Come on.
Matt, the fact is that we kind of like to impose on you for tonight. We haven't got any place to go, no money. Wondered if we could sleep in the jail tonight.
Oh, sure, Ed. Chester, would you get a fire going back there?
All right, Mr. Dillon.
And dig up some blankets out of the storeroom, huh?
Yes, sir. Hey, want to come help me, Jimmy? Jimmy?
No, yeah. You go along with Chester now, boy. Go on.
All right. He doesn't understand all this, Matt.
Ed, we may as well get your stuff out of the wagon, I guess.
Well, there ain't any wagon, Matt. We walked into town.
6 miles? With that leg?
I know, but that wagon, the horses, all the household goods, they're all covered by that mortgage. We didn't take anything except the clothes on our backs.
So help me, Ed. So help me if I could...
It's all right, Matt. We know how you feel. But after all, we started with nothing before. We can do it again.
But there's no reason you should have to.
We do have to, though. And that's that. Ed and I can accept it. not bitter any longer. Jimmy can't understand. He's been carrying on pretty bad, but he's just a boy. And in time, he'll be able to...
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, what is it, Chester?
It's Jimmy. He grabbed a rifle from off the rack and took out the back way. I couldn't stop
him.
But where on earth's he going?
I think I know where he's going. Heaven help Caleb Andrews if we don't catch him.
We will return for the second act of Gunsmoke in just a moment.
All right, that's the first portion of Gunsmoke. More coming your way. That's called The Mortgage from 1952, the first year that Gunsmoke was on the air. So this has a great cast, William Conrad. You heard Dick Beals in there, plays the little kid, and then Georgia Ellis, Harry Bartell, and many, many others. But let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Bill Curtis, and also thanks, Roger Badish and Susan Berkus. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa Wolf, my co-host, Mike Costello, my executive producer here. Also, Shante Garth, she's our producer, and that's our team. And we're all going to be at Spin on April 23rd. Hope that our listeners will come out and meet and greet us. Spin, April 23rd. From 6 to 9 p.m., and it's a meet-and-greet. We're going to play some ping-pong. We've got hors d'oeuvres and appetizers, free admission. And Spin is at 344 North State Street. Right, Lisa?
You got it all.
We want nothing left to say. We want our listeners to come out and meet and greet us. All right, it's time now for the conclusion to Gunsmoke.
Now the second act of Gunsmoke.
Mr. Andrews' house there on the corner. Looks dark, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, you may not be home. I sure hope he isn't.
No sign of the boy around. Reckon he broke in the house, Mr. Dillon?
Maybe. Anyhow, it's 10 to 1. This is where he headed for. His mother said he was real upset about it, and it's just like a kid to... Chester?
Hmm?
There's somebody back of that tree up there on the left.
Mm. Yeah. Think it's him?
I don't know. Just keep on walking. Yeah, it's him, all right. I can see the moonlight on the rifle barrel.
Will we try to rush him, Mr. Dillon?
Not unless you're thinking of suicide. I'm going to talk to him, Chester. Jimmy? It's me, Matt Dillon.
Go away, Mr. Dillon. Better go away now. Don't bother me.
I can't do that, Jimmy. You're a friend of mine, and I figure you're waiting here to do something that you'd be sorry for, and I can't let you do that.
Nothing you can do about it, Mr. Dillon. I got a gun here, and I'm going to kill him. You go away now, leave me alone.
Jimmy, I know how you feel. I don't like Caleb either, but killing him's no answer. You folks feel bad enough already. Think how it would hurt him if you did.
Stop, Mr. Dillon. I'll stay where you are. Don't come any closer.
I have to, Jimmy. It's my job. So if you're going through with this, I guess you'll have to kill me first.
No, no, Mr. Dillon, now stay back.
I'm sorry, Jimmy. I don't have a choice. But you do.
No. No. I couldn't shoot you, Mr. Dillon. You know that.
Sure. I knew you couldn't.
I kept waking up nights and hear a mom crying. Dad would sit up all night without the lamp lit, no fire, not say anything, just sitting.
Easy now, Jimmy.
Why is he doing it to us, Mr. Dillon?
Jimmy, listen to me. Will you do something for a friend?
Yeah. If you say so.
All right. Then take that rifle back to the jail and put it in the rack and go to bed. Now, you promise?
Yeah. I promise, Mr. Dillon. I'm sorry. I'll do like you say.
You're all right, Jimmy. Good night, son.
I could have told you Clem Bates wouldn't do anything, Matt. He wouldn't dare. He'd be scared Caleb would take his money out of the bank.
Yeah, that's about what he said. I don't know, Kitty. I've done everything I could possibly think of.
Well, the worst of it is everybody in town's just as scared of Caleb as Clem is. I doubt if they'll even have the nerve to bid against him at the sale.
Yeah, I know. He'll probably get the place at not much more than the amount of the mortgage.
$420. Matt, I've seen more than that change hands across a poker table here in one deal. You think that's all it takes?
I beg your pardon, Miss Kitty.
Oh, of course, Jack.
I'm not usually one to eavesdrop on people, but I have been listening to you, too.
Jack, have you met Marshall Dillon?
No, I haven't. The reason I butted in, Miss Kitty, I heard you talking about these people losing their home. I don't know this fellow Blake. He's never done any business over my table and probably never will.
No, I don't think he's ever been in here.
And I don't know if this will make sense. But the thing is, I left home when I was 10 years old, and I've been drifting ever since. When I see somebody like this Blake that sticks it out and works and fights and then gets a raw deal. Well, what I'm getting at, here's $50, if that'll help money.
Oh, Jack.
Well, this is awful decent of you, Jack.
Matt, I said a while ago that nearly everyone in town was afraid of Caleb.
Yeah.
Well, there's some who aren't, like Jack here and me and the rest of the dealers and the gamblers and the girls and the bartenders.
That's right, Miss Kitty.
Because we're drifters. We got nothing to lose. Matt, I'll raise $420 right here in the Texas Trail.
By heaven, Kitty, I think you could.
Well, I can't do as well as Jack, but... here's 20 for me. Boys! Everybody! Now listen to me for a minute. I got something to say.
He's sure taking his time getting here, Chester.
Well, I told him what you said, Mr. Dillon.
Well, that ought to bring him on the run, if anything, Will. Anytime Caleb figures he's about to lose a dollar or two, it's hitting him where it hurts.
The Blake's turned in for the night?
Yeah, I guess so. It's been quiet back there for the last few.
Marshal, what's this all about?
Well, shut the door, Caleb. We're trying to keep it warm in here.
Would you mind telling me why I've been called over here at this time of night?
Yeah, sure. Here's $420. The Blakes want to pay off the mortgage.
They do they?
The court costs up to now will probably run about $10. I'll pay that myself.
That's mighty generous of you. Well, good night, Marshal.
Is it a deal, then?
I am not the least bit interested in having that mortgage paid off, Marshal Dillon. The Blake farm is worth about $2,000 now, and in 5 years it'll be worth three times that much. Land's going up in Ford County. That's why I'm grabbing every piece I can get. So I don't want the money. I want the farm. And when it's put up for sale, I'll get it at my own price. The foreclosure still goes.
I see.
Good night, gentlemen.
Well, I guess that's that, Mr. Dillon.
I don't know why I even thought he'd take the money. The Blakes won't get a cent out of the sale. He'll scare everybody off and bid it in a few dollars over the amount of the mortgage, and nobody in town will even try to...
Try to what, Mr. Dillon?
Chester, I'm going over and wake up Clem Bates. I got an idea, and if it works, we'll hold that sale at noon tomorrow.
That's pretty short notice to find an auctioneer.
I don't need an auctioneer, Chester. This one I'm going to run myself. You know what we're here for. This is a foreclosure sale of the property and household effects of Edward and Martha Blake, ordered by the court at the request of that fine-spirited, good-hearted public benefactor and friend and neighbor of us all,
Caleb Andrews.
Marshal Dillon, I refuse to tolerate this.
Caleb, I think we better get one thing straight right now. The law tells me I gotta conduct this sale, but the law doesn't tell me what I gotta say while I'm conducting it.
Get on with it. Get on with the sale.
All right. Now, the first item I'm offering is a breadboard. Miss Blake tells me she's used this for nearly 10 years. That's a lot of loaves of bread. A lot of years. As you can see, it's pretty badly battered up. I doubt if it'd be worth much to anybody unless they were used to it. Suppose we started at 50 cents. Is there anybody here low enough to bid 50 cents for Mrs. Blake's breadboard? How about you, Caleb?
I'm not interested in the item. Get on with the sale.
Anybody else? No? All right, then. The second item. It's a crib. Now, you'll notice it's handmade. Rough construction. Never been painted. It's been well used. Ed built it himself 12 years ago, just before Jimmy was born. There are teeth marks all over the slats here, but that doesn't really hurt anything.
Marshal Dillon, may I suggest you lump the household effects together and offer them as one bulk item?
I'm sorry, Caleb. I'd rather offer them one at a time.
Yes.
Unless, of course, you'd care to waive all claim to the household effects and withdraw them from the order of foreclosure.
I waive the claim. The household goods are withdrawn. Now get on to the house and land.
So ordered. Now, the item offered is 160 acres of tillable land, a four-room house, and a barn. I won't read through the description. You all know the property. It's a good farm. The amount of the mortgage is $420. Held by Caleb Andrews. All right, the bidding's open. What am I offered?
$450.
I have $450 from Caleb Andrews. Do I hear another bid? Oh, the farm's worth $2,000. You're going to let him have it for $450? How about another bidder?
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, what is it, Chester?
Well, I've been thinking some lately of getting me a little place like this and settling down. I'll bid $1,000.
I have $1,000. Do I hear another bid?
It's a trick. He doesn't want this place.
$1,000. Going once.
$1,200.
Caleb Andrews bids $1,200. What do you say, Chester?
Well, sir, I think I kind of like this farm. $1,500.
This is ridiculous.
The bid is $1,500. Going once. Going twice.
$1,600.
$1,600 from Mr. Andrews. Chester?
$8,420.
He never had that much money in his whole life.
Do I hear another bid? Oh, what do you say, Caleb?
Do you think I'm a fool?
Going once, going twice, sold to Chester Proudfoot for $8,420. The buyer will come forward and complete the sale.
Don't you worry none about me, Mr. Andrews. I got it right here. There's $8,000 in $500 bills, and here is the $420.
Where did you ever get that much in cash?
Well, I save my pay, Mr. Andrews. And, of course, I drink just mostly beer. It adds up after a while.
Caleb, I guess $420 of this is yours. And that takes care of the mortgage. Well, Ed, looks like you made a pretty fair profit on the place.
Yeah, better than I expected,
Here's
Matt.
Your money.
Thank you, Matt. But I tell you, I'd still rather have the farm than the money.
Well, now, I've been sort of thinking it over, Mr. Blake. Maybe I kind of lost my head. But when you come right down to it, I don't know what I'd ever do with a farm. So if you'd like to buy it, I'll take a $420 loss and sell it back to you for $8,000 cash.
Done. Here's your money.
This is unheard of. They can't do it, Marshal.
Well, as far as I know, there's no law against a man selling his own property.
Now, the way I see it, Mr. Andrews, is right this minute you're a trespasser on my property. Come on, let's go.
Let go. Hey, Gracie, who do you think you're landing?
Chester.
You better get that $8,000 back to the bank. Clem Bates is probably worrying himself into a breakdown for fear somebody will find out that he let us have it.
All right, Mr. Dillon, I'll see you in town later.
Yeah.
Oh, Matt, I don't know how we can ever thank you for what you've done.
Not me, Martha. Thank the bunch that work at the Texas Trail. You know, they're bums and drifters, most of them. But when Kitty told them the story, they really came through.
We'll pay it back, Matt, every cent of it. And, well, that girl, Kitty, I guess I've said some hard things about her in the past, but... Matt, will you ask her to come out to dinner some afternoon?
What?
I'd like to thank her myself.
Sure, Martha, I'll ask her. And I think she'll appreciate that more than you'll ever know.
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by Les Crutchfield, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, Paula Winslow, and Richard Beals, with Joe Duvall, Lawrence Dobkin, and Jim Nusser. Parley Bear is Chester and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Gunsmoke is heard by our troops overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Here's a suggestion for Saturday listening. Fun for All, starring Bill Cullen and Arlene Francis, and John Reed King's great show, Give and Take. Hear them tomorrow on CBS Radio. Clancy Cassell speaking. And remember, you'll find Western adventure and music with Gene Autry Saturday evenings on the CBS Radio Network.
Probably the best adult Western on radio, Gunsmoke. Also, Have Gun Will Travel was very, very good, too. But I think Gunsmoke, probably the best show, had the best writing, the best cast in it as well. And that's an episode from October 24th, 1952, called The Mortgage, starring William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon, as heard on CBS. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, we're back. Thanks, Roger. Thank you, Susan. And it is time for our second hour here on the WGN Radio Theater program, 170 in the series. This hour, it's a good comedy on the Halls of Ivy, starring Ronald and his Ronald Coleman and his wife, Benita Coleman. Then in our third hour, it's Casey Crime Photographer. Lisa and I and Mike and Shante, we're here every single Saturday and Sunday night, playing your favorite classic radio shows two nights a week, Saturday and Sunday, 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. We play six classic radio shows for you. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming musical Vox Lux about the unexpected success of a pop star.
What do they win?
They are going to win two tickets to the Tony Award-winning musical Disney's Mary Poppins at Mercury Theater.
Okay. 312-981-7200 is the number. This actor played Watson opposite Robert Downey Jr. as Holmes in the Sherlock Holmes films.
Oh, how I've missed you, Holmes.
All right, who is that? Yeah, just a short little bite. Like we're going to have
just a little nibble
with cake.
Any moment.
312-981-7200. Who is that actor? Find our winner after these words.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip again.
Oh, how I've missed you, Holmes.
And we've got Deborah on the line. Hey, Deborah.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, I'm good. You guys?
Good. We're glad you got through, and we're hoping you know the right answer.
Jude Law.
That is right. Jude Law is the correct answer. Carl,
yes,
you look confused.
No, she has it right on the money.
Deborah, you know what you've won? Something fantastic.
Yes.
Yes, this is two tickets to the Tony Award-winning musical Disney's Mary Poppins. It's now playing through May 28th at the Mercury Theater Chicago. Bring your family. Spend a jolly holiday with Mary. Tickets are at mercurytheaterchicago.com. We are so excited for you, and we hope that you really enjoy the show.
Oh, I do very much. I can't get out that much, so I really enjoy this every weekend.
Oh, thank you so much. We're glad to have you as a listener.
Thanks, Deborah.
Happy
appreciate it. Thank you.
We're about to celebrate. Stay with us.
All right. So, we have cake.
Oh,
we have cake. Oh, my gosh. We have cake. All right.
Happy
so.
Birthday.
You know what?
Oh,
you
know,
same,
hang on.
I know she doesn't like to be in.
Yeah. Yes. What about that,
I'm
Lisa?
Sorry. I got so excited by the cake. I forgot what I was doing.
Lisa hasn't eaten in a while, so
you know
she's really excited.
About? We're getting plates.
We have plates?
We've got Roger and Susan, and it's a party.
Yeah, Lisa's here,
too. Lisa's here, too.
Yeah. So.
And, Lisa.
Well,
she snuck in behind me.
Let me just say this. This cake is made by the Ritz-Carlton. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So the Ritz-Carlton Chicago is delighted to carry on the Decca cake tradition to celebrate the anniversary of the WGN Radio Theater. We started with one of these cakes right at the beginning when we first started here at WGN Radio Theater, and they have so generously donated it for us tonight. So their pastry team comes up with a 10-layer ultra-decadent cake, and it's a very time-consuming process. They are sliced into thin layers, no more than 1/8 inch thick. They use Valrhona cocoa. There's a 70% single origin
Valrhona
dark
cocoa.
Chocolate
That's
for
what
the
it
icing.
Is, Roger.
It's got 14 karat gold cake flake. You know what? We are so excited. This is the most popular dessert. It's offered to guests at the Ritz-Carlton and the Decca restaurant
there. This is beyond.
This
what do you
is truly
Susan?
A gift.
Susan Berkus is down here too. You're going to love it, Susan. Oh, my gosh.
So we're going to take some videos and some pictures, and we're going to sing to ourselves, and we're going to have a party.
All right, but we're going to play Halls of Ivy now, and while that's playing, we're going to all be stuffing ourselves with cake.
Fantastic.
All right, so Halls of Ivy, situation comedy, Ronald and Benita Coleman were the stars. It was created by Don Quinn, who also created Fibber McGee and Molly. And Ronald Coleman played William Todhunter Hall, president of Ivy College, and his wife was the former British musical comedy star Victoria. And it was just a great and delightful radio and television series. Made a transition to TV as well. So here's part one now of Shakespeare Expert, starring Ronald and Benita Coleman, from February 3rd, 1950, on the Halls of Ivy.
Gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, presents the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. And now, the Halls of Ivy.
That surround us here today, and we will not forget, though we be far, far away.
Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. The last class of the day has been dismissed, and both students and faculty are relaxing. In the home of Dr. William Todhunter Hall, president of Ivy, and his wife, formerly a shining light of the London stage, Dr. Hall is lying on the couch, and Mrs. Hall is sitting on the floor beside him, going over the afternoon mail, which arrived a few minutes ago.
Well, here's the last of the lot. It's an invitation to tea. What reply shall I make?
What does it say?
On Saturday the 16th, Mrs. Millicent Foster will be at home between 4 and 6.
Dr. William Hall, likewise.
That's rather a crisp refusal, don't you think? I mean, to someone as rich as Mrs. Foster. Now, what happens to a college president who misses a chance to wangle an endowment?
Well, the established procedure, I believe, calls for his board of governors to form a hollow square, snip off his buttons, and drum him out of the service. Unless, of course, he can prove it was not his fault. If he can do that, then the board naturally takes that into consideration.
I see. What do they do then?
Well, then they, form a hollow square, snip off his buttons, and drum him out of the service. And he and his wife are never... never just rub my back a little. Here. No, no, a bit to the left. Left. That's it. Ah. And he and his wife are never again seen in academic circles. They become flotsam and jetsam on the stream of life.
You know, I think you ought to accept Mrs. Foster's invitation. She's apt to be very receptive to your ideas about building Ivy.
Well, why should she be? I've never even met her.
Have you forgotten what that magazine article said about you last week? Toddy, your cheesecake.
Oh, no, Victoria, now.
What was that line? No ineffectual intellectual he.
Oh, Victoria.
And that caption beneath the photograph. Sexy Prexy.
Now, Victoria, please. The tone of that article was entirely incommensurate
with the... article contained a great deal of truth.
The tone of that article was entirely...
Toddy, face it. You're an attractive human being.
The tone of that... Well, anyway, it's nice to have you think so.
Well, I'm sure I'm not the only one. Girls must always have found you attractive. And tell me that before you met me, you never dilly-dallied.
Dillied, perhaps, Victoria, but I never dallied. I think we might bring this discussion of my personal charms to a close by accepting Mrs. Foster's invitation to tea.
Yes. One moment while I note it down. There. No hollow square for you. Your regimental buttons are quite safe.
Well, as far as we know. However, I think the... Oh, answer the phone, will you, Victoria?
Certainly, if I can find it.
Oh, this happens every time. That phone is never twice in the same place.
Oh, now, Toddy, it'll turn up sooner or later.
Let it out of your sight for one moment and off it scampers on a frolic of its own.
It's not under the coffee table.
Then never mind, Victoria, I see it.
Where?
On the telephone table, of all places. Dr. Hall speaking. Oh, yes, good afternoon, Mr. Merriweather. This is an unexpected pleasure. With whom? Oh, I've never met him, but of course his reputation. Oh, yes, by all means, do. Goodbye. Mr. Merriweather, he's on his way over.
Oh, good. I adore Mr. Merriweather. I wish all the members of the Board of Governors were like him. Did I tell you what he said to me last time he visited? As he was leaving, he pinched my cheek, looked deeply into my eye, sighed an enormous sigh, and said, "Gad, ma'am, what I wouldn't give to be 70 again."
Chester Bromley is with him.
Chester Bromley? I don't think I know him.
Well, he's perhaps the greatest authority on Shakespeare since Kittredge of Harvard, and one of the finest pedagogues this country has ever produced. I wonder what Merriweather has on his mind. Do you suppose the board is displeased about something?
Oh, no point fretting, Toddy. Think about something else. Tell me more about Dr. Bromley.
He's the best kind of academician. His real love for his subject and, what is even more admirable, he can communicate his enthusiasm and fire to his students. He may want to reopen the whole matter of breakage in the physics lab.
Dr. Bromley?
No, dear, Mr. Merriweather, he can't seem to understand that with the increased emphasis on the sciences, expenses are bound to mount. I wish we could have him here at Ivy permanently.
Mr. Merriweather?
No, darling, Dr. Bromley. He's unearthed more truth about his subject matter than any other researcher in the field. I don't suppose you know there's no foundation whatsoever to the story that he was horsewhipped for poaching deer when a boy.
Dr. Bromley or Mr. Merriweather?
William Shakespeare.
He's on third.
Who's on third?
Who's on first? I could use a cup of tea. Well,
it's very confusing, the whole thing.
Philip!
You know, it's only recently that Bromley has received the recognition he deserves. Most of his life, he taught at third-rate schools throughout the country. Not until Oxford invited him to lecture did the academic world realize what a great man he really is.
Did you call, Mum?
Yes, there'll be four for tea.
Yes, Mum.
One moment, Penny. Toddy, did you know Penny was born and bred in Shakespeare's hometown?
Really? Stratford-on-Avon?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you must know quite a good deal about him.
Oh, yes. Couldn't help but learn what we've been raised there. I could tell you ever so many things.
Now, go ahead. I'm very interested.
Well, for one thing, he was English.
Yes, I have heard some such rumor.
And he wrote plays.
You did keep your ears open, didn't you?
I haven't read any of the plays, of course, but an uncle of mine did, and he spoke very highly of them.
Benny, Shakespeare was one of the greatest masters of the English language who ever lived.
Well, I can understand your being impressed by that, being a Yank. But I've been speaking the English language all my life.
You certainly have.
And, oh, let me see. Oh, yes. He's dead.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, thank you very much, Penny.
Oh, don't mention it, sir. Any time at all. Oh, excuse me, sir, the door.
Sorry, dear. I'm afraid Penny didn't help much.
No, I wouldn't say that she had made my regimental buttons any more secure, but it was a good try, Vicky.
Dolly, quick, before Dr. Bromley comes in, tell me more about him so I can talk to him.
Well, one of the things he did was to clear up the mystery of the second best bed.
The second best bed?
Yes, you see, Shakespeare was quite wealthy when he died, and yet, in his will, he left his wife only his second best bed. Scholars speculated for years about that.
Yeah, I bet the neighbors did, too.
Mr. Merriweather, sir.
Oh, thank you, Penny. Good afternoon, Mr. Merriweather.
Hello, Hall. Good to see you again. More than good to see you, ma'am.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Merriweather. You're looking very fit.
Feeling very fit. Winked at a pretty girl this morning. She winked right back. Thing like that's a tonic to a man my age.
Well, isn't Dr. Bromley with you?
Oh, he'll be here later. He's inspecting the library. I couldn't wait to have a business appointment a little later. Dr. Hall, I have good news. I've got Bromley on the verge of joining our faculty.
No.
Yes. I was introduced to him. Remember that opening in the English department? Decided he was the one to fill it.
Well, that's wonderful. How in the world did you manage? I've heard he's turned down scores of offers.
Well, simply reasoned with the man. Look here, I said, and so on and so on and so on. Yes, he answered, but what about this and that? Well, it's all very good, I said, but it carries no weight whatsoever when you take such and such into consideration. And that clinched it.
Yes, I can see where it would. It's a very potent argument.
Anyway, I persuaded him to visit Ivy for a few hours, and all you have to do is wind up the deal.
I still don't understand. Surely some of the positions he's rejected carry much larger salaries than anything we can offer.
Well, he mentioned that, but he added it was no criterion. He seems to place all the weight on the fact that not one of the college presidents with whom he's spoken since his return from Oxford could answer a very simple question. Not one. Shocking, don't you think?
I should be very interested in knowing what the question is.
What was it again? Oh, yes. What was William Shakespeare like personally? Just tell him that and he's ours.
Well, Mr. Merriweather, let me assure you that is not a simple question. I've no idea why Dr. Bromley would accept or reject a post on such a fantastic basis, but no one has ever answered that question to anyone else's satisfaction. We have no way of knowing what Shakespeare thought or felt about anything.
Oh, I don't agree. Now, what about that line in... I forget which play. Where, what's his name? Says, and so on.
Yes, well, that line notwithstanding, one cannot deduce the bard's personality from his work any more than one can tell what sort of a man Henry Ford was by examining a Model T.
Well, I'm stunned by what you tell me, Hall. I'm only a layman, but even I know something about him. He was an excellent businessman, shrewd market manipulator.
Well, now, from which of his plays did you get that information, Mr. Merriweather?
Mrs. Hall, I appeal to you.
No, please don't. I don't know anything about him. Never even had a walk-on in one of his plays. He wrote in so few dance routines.
I don't know what to say. Why, I've already telegraphed the other members of the board. We'd signed up Bromley.
Wasn't that a trifle hasty, Mr. Merriweather?
Well, I suppose it was, but I've always had such confidence in your ability. Till now?
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but under the circumstances, it's unavoidable.
I suppose so. I'll try to make that very clear to the rest of the board. Well, must be going.
I'll inform you of Bromley's decision as soon as I've talked to him.
It's hardly worth the trouble, is it? Oh, good afternoon, ma'am.
Good afternoon.
Oh, One moment, Doctor.
What is it?
Your sleeve. Allow me. One of your buttons. Hanging by a thread. Good day.
All right, that's the first portion of The Halls of Ivy, broadcast from February 3rd, 1950, The Shakespeare Expert, starring Ronald and Benita Coleman. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes. First, these words here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Susan, and thanks, Roger. We appreciate you guys. All right, we're tuning into The Halls of Ivy with Ronald and Benita Coleman. And as I said, Lisa, this radio series made a transition to television. And when it did, you know what they did on the TV show? Huh?
What'd they do, Carl?
They took the radio scripts and adapted them into TV scripts.
Which is a better plan than...
Yeah, they just took the same radio scripts and just said, let's just basically film the radio show on TV. That's what they did. And it was the same cast on radio and TV, it was a very successful show. And it's very funny comedy as well.
Well, interesting also because not all actors can make the transition from radio to television. It doesn't always work for numerous reasons.
Right. I mean, a lot of times it was a completely different cast.
Most of the time.
Well, on Gunsmoke, which we played earlier, it was an absolutely, completely and totally different cast.
Right.
You know, interestingly, on Father Knows Best, it was a completely new cast, except for Robert Young.
Right.
Halls of Ivy, they just put the whole thing right on television. All right, let's get back to it. Here's the conclusion now to The Halls of Ivy.
That surround us here today.
To be or not to be, ready to answer Dr. Bromley's question. That's what's troubling Dr. Hall, as he says,
"How the devil should I know what Shakespeare is like personally? Meriwether has no reason to expect I should. If at my age I must be a quiz kid, at least let the questions be some..." Yes, what is it, Penny?
Nothing, sir. I've only brought the tea. You did say tea for four, didn't you, miss?
Yes, I did, but...
Because I was wondering whether there's enough hot water.
There is indeed plenty of hot water, plenty.
Professor Hall?
Yes?
Regarding what we was talking about before, Shakespeare, I've remembered something else. They referred to him as the Bird of Avon.
They may shortly refer to me as the dead pigeon of ivy. Thank you, Penny. That'll be all.
Yes, sir. Would you like some tea now, Toddy?
Oh, I think we'd better wait for Bromley. Oh, he's certainly taking his time about it, isn't he?
Well, after all, life around a college is always leisurely.
Yes, it is. Are you ever sorry you married into such a life? Don't you sometimes find it boring?
Toddy, let me tell you something. Before we met, I'd been proposed to by a big game hunter, a test pilot, and a chemist doing research in high explosives. And frankly, compared to the pickles in which you find yourself, I suspect any of them would have been good and dull.
I don't think I'm in such a bad predicament this time, Victoria. It's only that it may be one of the straws piling up to the one that breaks the camel's back. I never know when the members of the board may start sharpening their snippers and licking their chops with eagerness.
You're getting very careless with your similes, Toddy. Or are they metaphors?
Metaphors.
Oh, but that little touch about licking their chops, masterly, I call that.
Oh, it's nothing really. It just came to me.
Yeah. Well, I say there's little to worry about. Let them fire you if they like.
A less cavalier approach to the matter, Vicky, if you don't mind.
No, I mean it. Let them. I know who'll regret it first.
Oh, so do I. It's a buyer's market in college presidents. I have no desire to glut it. But over and above that, sentimental though it may sound, I love Ivy, and I'm very keen on my job. My father went to Ivy. His father went to Ivy. My great-grandfather went to Harvard.
Really? And sent his son to Ivy?
Well, you know how it is. A man always wants his children to have the good things in life he himself has missed. The devil is Bromley.
Have you any idea what you'll say to him when he does arrive? About Shakespeare, I mean.
Oh, I shall have to answer his question in some fashion if he asks it. Of course, I've always had a conception of Shakespeare. I've thought of him as someone who was very happy in his work, and extremely interested in people, and a man who might have dedicated his life to a cause worthy of his efforts.
Mm. Is it so very important that Ivy get this Professor Bromley? I mean, is it worth all this fuss?
If he were just another run-of-the-class professor, my dear, I'd say no. But this man is one of the torchbearers of learning, one of the inspired teachers, a man with a gift of communication. Men like him, who shamefully underpaid and unrecognized beyond their own academic horizons, are still the glory of those colleges lucky enough to have them. They're the ones who are remembered down the years with affection and gratitude by the students. And if he's that kind, well, I hope we snag him.
Oh, if you decide you want him, dear, I'm sure you will.
Yes, I know, but it's a little late in the day to lay out any involved strategy.
Well, you're not much of a campaigner anyway, Toddy. I always think of you more as, spur-of-the-moment man.
Oh, you're quite wrong, my darling. Don't let my apparent impulsiveness deceive you. Compared to me, Niccolo Machiavelli was a witless blunderer.
Oh.
Do you remember the first time I kissed you?
But you didn't kiss me. I kissed you.
Oh, no, you're wrong. I remember it very clearly because it was the culmination of a campaign the like of which for planning and preparation had not been seen since Austerlitz. That picnic we had on the river near Pangbourne, remember?
Mm.
The major tactical problem was how to get you in my arms. But we never seemed to be alone long enough in London. So I invited you to a picnic. And no sooner had we gotten out of the car and strolled down to the river through a herd of cows to feed the swans.
Did you remember to bring the crumbs for the swans?
3 bags full. Now, it's rather rocky here. Be careful.
Oh, well, I'm careful. I can... Oh, dear.
What happened? Twist your ankle?
Yes. Afraid I have a bit.
See if you can stand on it.
Yeah. No, I can't.
Well, sit down here on this stump.
No, I have a show to do tonight. I'd better have a doctor take a look at it as soon as possible. Would you mind terribly if we went back to town?
You mean right now?
Yes.
Oh, no. No, of course I don't mind.
Well, let me lean on you. I'll hop.
No, don't be silly. I'll carry you. Like this.
Oh, don't you think I'll be too heavy?
Not in the least. You think I'm a weakling?
Oh, no. This is delightful. You're sure I'm not too heavy? I can feel your heart beating.
Not because you're too heavy, believe me. I've never been this close to you before. What's that scent you're wearing? It's wonderfully heady.
Just me.
I never heard of it. Oh, you mean it's you?
Don't you want me to put me down and take a breather?
No, you're light as a feather, really. Yes, I'm enjoying this enormously. Funny, I never noticed that spray of freckles across your nose.
Do you like it?
The freckles or the nose?
Oh, the combination.
Yeah, very much. And the face that goes with it. Nice coloring all over it.
I think your coloring's getting a trifle high. You'd better put me... You
know, it's only a few steps more to the car.
You sound very relieved.
But I'm not. I would like this to go on forever. May not get a chance to hold you again.
You may not live to do it unless you put me down. Professor Hall, please, put me down.
Very well, if you prefer. There.
Oh, and for heaven's sake, sit down beside me.
Thank you. Believe me, I will.
Professor Hall, you're a knight in shining armor, but you don't have to kill yourself to prove it. I'm sorry. I wish you could see your face.
It is funny, way things worked out. I plan a picnic, and it's Over in 5 minutes, I attempt gallantry and lose my wind.
And just as you were about to kiss me, weren't you?
Now, I'm offered a kiss and can't catch my breath.
Never mind, Professor Hall. I'll wait. I'll wait until the cows come home.
Ah, what a lovely sound. I'm surprised no one has written a symphony around the cowbell.
That isn't a cowbell, Toddy. That's the doorbell.
Well, why should a cow ring a ring? Oh, the doorbell. Yes. I must have been daydreaming again. And didn't quite finish it. You owe me a kiss.
I do, sir? You were speaking to me, Penny.
Oh, excuse me. Dr. Brumley to see you, sir.
Oh, yes, yes. Won't you come in, Doctor?
Thank you. How do you do?
Victoria, may I introduce Dr. Brumley? Dr. Brumley, my wife.
How do you do, Mrs. Hall?
So nice of you to call. Penny, the gentleman's coat and hat.
No, please. I have a taxi waiting outside. I can only spend a few minutes.
Oh, that's too bad. I had hoped you might stay longer. Much, much longer.
Several years, perhaps?
Yes. I don't mind telling you it would be quite a feather in Ivy's cap to have you on the faculty.
Thank you. And I don't mind telling you, I agree wholeheartedly. I trust I don't appear immodest. It's only that I've recently acquired a fair idea of my own worth. You see, the past few months, I've received 53 offers to decorate some school's bonnet.
Oh, it'd be foolish to pretend ignorance of the fact that you're greatly in demand.
Only recently, for 31 years of my career, the shoe was on the other foot. Dr. Hall, you know the tons of application papers an unknown professor fills out in 31 years of job hunting? State name, age, degrees, colleges, previous positions, salary, academic honors, administrative abilities.
Well, we can't expect to be taken on when they don't know anything about us.
Oh, that's very true. I appreciate that. But you can't expect me not to enjoy the turning of the tables now that I've acquired the stature that permits me to ask the questions.
Yeah, I'm beginning to understand. What was Shakespeare like personally, eh?
Mr. Merriweather told you that, did he? Well, can you answer it?
Tell Dr. Bromley what you've always said, William. That Shakespeare was a man who felt he'd never received the honors due to one who stood at the top of his profession. This colored his entire life.
Victoria,
How in the world did you know? Dr. Hall, that's precisely the conclusion I've reached. After half a lifetime of intense study, how in the world did you know?
You mean, you... Why, it's obvious.
you take my breath away. I should like to discuss this matter further with you. How about letting me stay for dinner tonight?
Oh, but of course, please stay.
Just let me go outside and dismiss my taxi. I'll be right back. Don't go away.
Excuse me, Toddy. I want to tell Penny there'll be three for dinner.
No, wait. Victoria, how the devil did you know the answer? What do you know about Shakespeare?
All I know about Shakespeare, Toddy, is that Sir Laurence Olivier did a lovely job with Hamlet.
Yes, I know.
I do know a little about people. When I heard Mr. Merriweather describe him as a businessman, which Mr. Merriweather is, and you describe him as a man who loved his work, which you do, it occurred to me that Dr. Bromley might also see him as a man very like himself. That's all. Excuse me, I simply must tell
you. One minute, Vicky. I want you to say all that again.
Yeah, well, later, Toddy. Why don't you phone and see if you can reach Mr. Merriweather with the good news?
I will.
I'll be back with you in a few minutes.
Hello. Hello, Mr. Merriweather. Dr. Hall, I wanted you to know that through your initiative and Mrs. Hall's great knowledge of the classics, Dr. Bromley has decided to join our faculty. Yes, I'm extremely gratified. Anything I have done is, as my students would say, strictly off the cuff. Which reminds me, Mr. Merriweather, remember that loose button on my cuff? I fixed it.
And here again are Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Darling, you signed him up. I knew you'd do it.
My dear girl, like most men, I am capable of some amazing self-delusions, but not on this score. I know who gave Brumley the answer which convinced him that Ivy was his spiritual home.
Isn't it awful the way I keep butting in?
Was it Shakespeare or Dr. Hall who said, "A man proposes, but woman disposes"?
I'm sure I don't know. Why?
Oh, I was just thinking that since I proposed to you, my darling, my life has been so well disposed.
Well, thank you, dear.
And not at all, darling. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Week at this time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. The other players were Willard Waterman, Gloria Gordon, and William Johnstone. Tonight's script was written by Walter Brown Newman and Don Quinn. The music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. The Halls of Ivy was created by Don Quinn, directed by Nat Wolfe, and presented by the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Ken Carpenter speaking.
That surround us here today, and we will not forget, though we be far, far away.
That. Next, hear We the People over most of these same NBC stations.
Gee, Lisa.
Carl,
talked
you
over
just,
that.
You just can't wait that was, to start talking. You're so
sorry,
excited.
Folks. That was The Halls of Ivy from February 3rd, 1950. The Shakespeare Expert starring Ronald and Benita Coleman. Ken Carpenter doing the announcing. He was really good at fixing the house and stuff. He had a really good tool belt and... He was a good carpenter, that Ken Carpenter. And then Willard Waterman is in that show there. Willard Waterman played Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve for a while. He came in after Hal Perry left the role and took it into television. He was Gildersleeve on TV as well. Hope you enjoyed The Halls of Ivy. Let's take a quick break. Then it's much more coming your way here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, well, are you caked out? I had a big hunkin' piece of cake.
Yep, I'm good for
it
a while.
It was good. Oh, man, was that cake good.
Whew. It was delicious. I mean, I have to admit, couldn't have made that cake.
I was thinking, you know, I'm really watching what I eat. I'm working out every day and
yeah,
everything.
Me too.
And I'm just thinking, I probably just ate 2,000 calories.
I know, me too. That's just bad.
Well, 1 o'clock birthday. In the morning.
I mean, it's a celebration. It's a
it's
milestone.
Not a birthday.
No, it's an anniversary. That's what I meant.
But I probably literally intook 2,000 ingested 2,000 calories just now with that piece of cake.
That's
I'll
okay.
bet.
You'll,
but it was worth
you'll work it.
It was
off.
So good. You
it
know?
Was really special.
Gosh, it's so good. I would probably need to run around WGN like 50 times. I have to
All
go
right.
outside and run around.
Well, you go ahead. I'll be right here.
Yeah.
I'll wait for you.
You'll be right here eating
I'll
some more cake.
I'll watch you walking by.
all right. Hey, we should tell our listeners that they can text us and tell us what they want to hear because I'm going to start working on the next round of programming.
Well, that means I'm going to start working on the next round of programming pretty soon.
So I will be picking out the shows
all
and
right.
sending it to you for your approval.
All right.
Because I know the hierarchy here at WGN Radio
All right,
Theater.
So give them the text line, 312-981-7200. We would love to hear what you'd like to hear.
Yeah. We will play what you want us to play. If you want to hear Jack Benny, we'll play that. If you want to hear The Shadow, Suspense, Inner Sanctum, Boston Blackie, Philip Marlowe, Sam Spade, Gunsmoke, Have Gun Will Travel, all these great radio shows from the golden age of radio. They're yours right here every Saturday and Sunday night. And we love to play what you want to hear. So just text us and tell us what you want to hear. 312-981-7200. I also thought we should do, remember in years, probably a year and a half ago or something, we were doing like spotlight on, you know, a certain celebrity like Humphrey Bogart. We played shows with Humphrey Bogart.
Yes.
Somebody has been texting and saying we need to do something on Kirk Douglas. And I think that's a really good idea because he's either 99 or 100
right
now.
Yeah, that was last night. One of our listeners suggested that.
That's a great idea. And he appeared on a bunch of radio shows. So maybe we'll do something on Kirk.
Yep, that would be great.
And then, you know, stuff like that, right, Lisa?
Stuff like that.
Come
That's
up with
what
some
we're going
stuff.
To do.
Come
Me?
Up with some stuff.
Are you kidding?
And we'll do it.
I come up with, I'm the brains come up behind with,
that's
the operation.
That's right. You're the brains and the talent, and I am the character.
That's it. Now right? we got it straight.
There's some fun pictures. We've posted some fun pictures on our Facebook page.
We have a video and we have a picture of the cake, and we haven't posted the picture of the whole group yet. We're going to put it on our podcast, but I can post it.
Yeah, post it, and please like us when you go to Facebook. Are we at 2,200 yet?
We are not.
No?
We are so
come on,
close,
folks.
But not quite
Get
there.
Get us past 2,200 tonight.
All right, I'll tell you exactly what we are at. We are at 2,171.
Oh, man. That's only 29 more.
I think
more.
We got one like tonight.
That's it? Come on, folks.
Yeah, sorry.
I'll beg. I'm not above begging.
Yeah,
I will
I am,
get on my hands and knees and beg.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I have no
Facebook.
I have no comment.
I have no comment to that, right? Mm-hmm. All right. I'm more than happy to beg for Facebook likes.
Okay.
In our next hour, it's Casey Crime Photographer from 1947, The Mysterious Lodger, starring Stotts Cotsworth. That's a great series, Casey Crime Photographer. And you know what, Lisa? They had several television shows based on this series. One of them was called Man with a Camera that starred Charles Bronson in his only regular television series. He was exactly like they called it the Man with a Camera, but it was really based on Casey Crime Photographer. But you know what else? Darren McGavin also had a series. And then later, remember that series he was in, Night Stalker? Remember that?
I do. I don't remember watching it, but I know that it existed. I don't know.
So basically, it was like he would fight vampires and mummies and things like that. But it was sort of based on this Casey Crime Photographer, but they took it into the supernatural.
Right.
Right? They put a supernatural spin on it.
Twist.
So quite a few television shows kind of were spawned because of this radio show. We're going to play it next right here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolfe.
All right. 1:06 in the morning. Happy Monday. Thanks for staying up late with us. This is the WGN Radio Theater, where we play all your favorite classic radio shows, the broadcast from the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, before the advent of television, Lisa. You know, you grew up listening to all these radio shows, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Well, kind of during the transition, I would say.
You know, the interesting thing...
or slightly after that.
My parents... listen to all these shows, okay?
Mine
they listened to all of these programs. And growing up, until when I first discovered classic radio, I was 12 years of age, right? Prior to 12 years of age, I had no clue, that there was anything like these radio shows.
Right.
My mom and dad never talked about these shows. They never really talked about these shows until I got into it and then talked to them about it. And then they were like, oh, yeah, my mom would tell me that she liked Life with Luigi and Dr. Kildare and all these. And my dad was like, yeah, I like The Lone Ranger and these show different shows. But it was like it was gone. It was, you know, television was here. And that's what we talked about, TV.
Right.
And I think that that's why these shows should never die, because even though television came in and sort of took the place of these radio shows, they were such a magical medium, right? Because you can listen to these shows. You don't have to be sitting in front of a television. You could be in your car. You can be doing housework. You could be whatever. These radio shows are like watching TV, but in the theater of your mind.
Yep.
And that's why I think they work great, obviously, on radio.
I'll say that's the whole point of our show is to preserve them and to get them out and hopefully turn new people on to this who didn't already have the previous experience of the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
I would think that the majority of our audience did not grow up with these shows. I'm guessing the majority. I would say probably 75% of the people listening didn't hear that. Maybe they remember their parents talking about it, or maybe they've caught the very end of it. But, I mean, when you listen to the people calling in to win the prizes, there's a lot of young people.
I don't know about that.
Well, I do.
We don't know.
Yeah.
For certain. Oh, you know for certain.
No, I'm just saying. I think
there's probably more people than you think.
I mean, you would literally have to be 75 years of age or older. Because don't forget, Lisa, these shows were on, let's say, 1930s, 40s, and 50s, right? Even 1950
was 67
years ago.
Yeah.
67 years ago was 1950. And you had to be 7 or 8 years old to remember them.
Right.
So there's definitely a segment of our listeners that remember the shows towards the tail end of these shows, you know, maybe in the late 40s, early 50s, not so much in the 30s. But I think most of the people have discovered them. And there are other radio shows, not as good as our show.
No, of course not. But there's internet, which of course doesn't have the quality
There's other really good shows that play classic radio. We pride ourselves on the best quality and all that good stuff. But there's been classic radio on the air, especially in Chicago, for a long, long time.
Right.
So I think in Chicago, it's really a beloved medium. And we're very lucky to be on the biggest and best station in the country, playing these shows all across the country, 40-plus states that we can play these shows for. And don't forget, folks, we have a podcast. If you ever miss our show here on WGN, we have a podcast. And as soon as the show's over, I'd say like within a half an hour to an hour, the podcast is up, because I'm driving home and I'm able to listen to the podcast a lot of times.
Right. So it's on WGN Radio. It's also posted on our Facebook on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right. So don't miss our show, folks.
No, don't miss anything. Not even 1 hour.
And in this hour, it's Casey, crime photographer, brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming crime thriller Wind River, about an FBI agent who investigates a murder that occurred on a Native American reservation.
Mm-hmm.
And the winner gets a 4-pack of tickets to the Chicago Artisan Chocolate Show on April 22nd and April 23rd.
Very chocolatey.
Yes.
All right. We are
in chocolate mode here.
Yeah.
No question.
312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor plays Hawkeye in the Marvel films, and he played Black Ops agent Aaron Cross in 2012's The Bourne Legacy film.
I'm going to get my bag. We got to go.
All right, who is that guy? See, you don't get much. We just give you a little tidbit. 312-981-7200. Who's that actor? Give us a call. We'll find our winner after these words.
And we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
I'm going to get my bag. We got to go.
That's it. We've got Ryan on the phone. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad.
Good. Glad to hear from you. Who is that actor?
That's Jeremy Renner, right?
Jeremy Renner is exactly right. So happy for you. You have get the chocolate fix here. You get a pack of 4 tickets to the Chicago Artisan Chocolate Show. It's on April 22nd and 23rd at Plumbers Hall in the West Loop. You'll have some chocolate demonstrations and some chocolate sculptures and some chocolate thises and some chocolate thats.
Hey, you know what? Because it's on April 23rd, you can go to that and then come to our to our Spin Chicago.
Yeah. Get a little chocolate and then get a little ping pong and pizza.
Make it a whole night.
So you can get tickets and details at chocolateevents.net. Congratulations, Ryan, and we hope you'll add in some spin after your chocolate artisan show.
We'd love to meet you, Ryan.
Yeah, we're right up there.
Good to hear from you. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, it's time for Casey, crime photographer. This was an amateur detective series. The character of Jack Flashgun Casey was first seen in pulp magazines. You know what those are, Lisa? You know what a pulp magazine is?
Like a pulp fiction?
No, it actually was like a magazine, pretty thick magazine, like almost like a comic book, but a little thicker. And the paper was from trees, obviously, but it wasn't really refined very well. It was pretty, you know, the paper was not good quality, and they called them pulp magazines.
Yeah, like raw.
Yeah. Yeah. And Casey was a newspaper cameraman who took crime scene photos, but his eye for detail served him very well when he was taking those photographs, and he used that keen eye for detail in solving some of the crimes. And so that's what the series was all about. And it transitioned to television with Richard Carlisle and then later Darren McGavin in the title role. And as I said, Darren McGavin then kind of even put a little different spin on it and starred in The Night Stalker, right?
Right.
That was a great, that was a great series. I loved Darren McGavin in He'll Shoot Your Eye Out. It was a Christmas Story. He played the dad on there. Remember him?
I don't know.
Never saw that movie?
No.
Oh, wow. You never saw the Gene Shepard
Christmas Story?
Written A Christmas Story with little Ralphie?
No, I know the story, but I never saw it.
Oh,
no.
My gosh. Great, great, great movie, Lisa.
All right.
Come on, you got to watch that movie.
A Christmas Story?
Yeah, you have to watch it.
I'm not that Christmas.
Well, I know, but you got to watch it.
Okay.
All right, it's time for Casey Crime. Do you believe, folks, she's not seen that film? Come on.
But it's like they play a big holiday movie kind of gal.
It's just such, it's a classic. It's a great film.
I mean, I know the story.
Did you ever see It's a Wonderful Life?
Of course.
All right, well,
that's as good as it gets.
You have absolutely no argument then.
I love that.
If you saw that movie, you should see A Christmas Story.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, folks, am I right or wrong? Text us 312-981-7200. Time for Casey Crime Photographer. This is called The Mysterious Lodger. From March 6, 1947, Stotts Cotsworth stars part one now of Casey, Crime Photographer.
The Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation brings you Crime Photographer.
Hiya, Casey. Miss Williams.
Hello, Ethelbert. How are you?
Look at this. A picture of my sister's kid. My married sister, of course.
Say, he sure is growing up, Ethelbert.
Oh, here comes Tony. Why don't you show it to him?
Say, a fine-looking boy, Ethelbert.
Yeah, and you know what? Already he can say Uncle Ethelbert.
Uncle Ethelbert?
Yeah.
Well. But you know, the day I'll be excited is when he learns to say the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation is a great name in glass.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Tony Marvin. Every week at this time, the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation of Lancaster, Ohio, and its more than 10,000 employees bring you another adventure of Casey, Crime Photographer, ace cameraman who covers the crime news of a great city. Written by Alonzo Dean Cole, our adventure for tonight, The Mysterious Lodger. About 10 o'clock, in a private office at police headquarters, a telephone rings. A big man in civilian clothes reaches for its receiver and...
Homicide Bureau, Captain Logan speaking.
Is this the place to report a murder?
It is, lady.
I think I got one for you.
Who's this speaking?
I'm Maggie Myers. To be really proper, I'm Mrs. John Rodney Myers. I'm a widow.
What's the address?
1139 Midland Street.
1139 Midland?
That's right. It's my lodger, a lady who rooms with me who's been killed, I think.
What makes you think that...
Well, you get out here and look through the keyhole of her door like I just did, and you'll see...
We'll be there right away, Mrs. Myers.
I'll be waiting for you. Goodbye.
Sergeant Flanagan.
Yes, Captain?
Tell the tech squad and a doc to follow us to 1139 Midland Street. You go with me.
Yes, sir. What happened to 1139 Midland Street, huh?
Casey.
Good morning,
hi,
Captain.
What are you two doing here?
Well, don't we usually drop in to inquire what's happening in the murder department?
And it seems we picked just the right time today.
Okay, Miss Williams, you and that lug with the camera follow my car. Come on.
Look,
Logan's car stopped in front of that little cottage, Casey.
Mm-hmm. I'll park right behind him. Hey, this is a crummy neighborhood, Annie.
Yeah.
We're not going to get any front page stuff here.
Look. The little old woman just came out of that door.
Are you Mrs. Myers?
That's me, Maggie Myers. Mrs. John Rodney Myers.
Well, I'm Captain Logan, and this is Sergeant Flanagan.
How do you do?
Pleased to meet you, and come in.
You remember, we're in this party, too, Logan.
Who's this fellow with the picture box?
Just a press photographer, Mrs. Myers. Pay no attention to him.
Oh, you're here to take pictures of me with your brownie, young man?
My brat? Definitely, Mrs. Myers. Yeah?
Oh, come in, young man, and make yourself to home. You and your lady friend both. Oh, and be sure and wipe your feet on the mat.
Thank you.
Now, where's this lodger of yours whom you think
in the front bedroom, just off my parlor here. There.
Yeah, the door's locked.
It's the only room I rent out. The only room I got to rent, matter of fact.
Sergeant, take a squint through this keyhole. See if you see what I'm seeing.
There's only four rooms in this place. Parlor, kitchen, and front and back bedrooms.
There's a dame lying on the floor in there, Captain, and I'd say she'd been stabbed.
I used to have a nice big house when my husband was alive. Six rooms and bath.
We'll break in the door.
Hey, who'll pay for that door?
We can't think of that now, lady. Together, Flanagan.
Yeah. One push is all a door like that needs.
Hey, this dame on the floor is stone cold. Been dead for hours.
Look at this knife in her back, Captain. Pushed into the hilt.
Hold it, everybody. Got it. Thanks. Thank you.
You know you can't take pictures until I say so. Now, all of you, keep out of this room. I don't want you stepping on possible evidence.
Why, Captain, none of us have come inside that room. You know we know better than that.
When I'm watching you.
Poor Miss Patrick.
Is that the dead woman's name, Mrs. Myers?
Yes, Alice Patrick. At least that's what she told me. Such a nice, quiet woman she was. And she paid her rent so regular.
I'll want to hear all you know about her very soon. She's a big gal, about 45. Only a husky guy could have driven that knife so deeply into her back. That was done with one clean stroke, Sarge.
Yeah, it took muscle to do that, Captain.
Got any idea who was in this room with your lodger last night, Mrs. Myers?
No, I haven't, young man. Miss Patrick come home alone about 8 o'clock last night and said good evening, and then she went into her room, and I heard her lock the door.
When did you find that she'd been killed?
Well, when it got near 10 o'clock this morning and her door was still shut, I began to get a little worried.
Why?
Because I did, that's why.
Go on, please.
Well, finally I called her, and she didn't answer. Then I did what any woman would do and look through the keyhole. After that, I run out the corner store where there's a phone and called you.
Mm-hmm. This door wasn't only locked on the inside with a key, Logan. It was fastened with a bolt.
I told you not to come in here, Casey.
I'm only poking my head around the door frame, Logan.
The killer never left this room by the door, Captain.
That's pretty obvious, Miss Williams. He used that window.
Oh, he couldn't have done that, Captain. That window's locked.
Mrs. Myers, it's open 2 inches from the bottom.
I say it's locked. I know my own house. Try it.
Okay. Say, it is locked in this position.
Locked from the inside by them spring bolts in the frame. Miss Patrick always left it like that at night. Open enough to get fresh air, but not open enough so even a cat could get in. Somebody stabbed Miss Patrick in a room they couldn't get out of. But how?
It's very simple.
Oh, it is, huh?
Mm-hmm. Can I come into the room, pal? I'll watch my step.
No, come on.
Thanks. Now, look. This is an old-fashioned type of window without counterweights. To raise or lower the sash, you pull out two spring catches on the side.
Yeah?
Well, the round spring bolts in the sash snap into holes in the casing and lock when they hit those holes, which can be prevented. Probably to delay discovery of the body, the killer wanted to leave the window as he found it, open about 2 inches. So he ran a pair of thin strips or something, maybe cardboard, between the sash and the casement. Climbed outside, lowered the window, pulled out his strips, and let the spring locks shoot into place.
It could have been done that way easy, Captain.
I can see that myself now.
Casey, you've just ruined a nice mystery.
But who could have been strong enough to drive that dagger into Miss Patrick's back?
Step back into your parlor, Mrs. Myers. I want you to tell me all you know about Miss Patrick.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant, that sounds like the tech squad outside.
Oh, listen to all the klaxons.
Let them in and have them give that room the works.
Yes, sir.
Now, Mrs. Myers, how long have you known Miss Patrick?
Only 2 months, sir, since she rented my room. She was a very mysterious woman.
Mysterious.
Mysterious, Captain. Mysterious.
Now, to sum up what you've been saying, Mrs. Myers, this woman, Alice Patrick, answered an advertisement you put in the paper.
Yes, sir. It said, refined lady has pleasant furnished room to rent and own home.
That's beside the point.
I decided to take a lodger, Captain, not so much because I needed the money, though I could use it, of course, as because I get kind of lonesome. And I figured having another woman in the house...
We've gone over that. The point, Mrs. Myers, is that this woman never told you anything about herself.
That's why I say she was mysterious, Captain. Most women do tell things. Women like to talk.
I see that.
And another thing, she never went out of the house without leaving her suitcase locked.
How did you discover that?
How do you suppose I discovered it?
Sergeant Flanagan... Sergeant!
Yes, sir?
Bring that suitcase here if the tech men are finished with it.
Okay, Captain. I was just coming out for you. The doctor would like to have you in there for a minute.
All right. Hey, excuse me, Mrs. Myers. I'll be right back, Casey.
Say, Mrs. Myers, whose picture is this on the wall, this beautiful woman?
Believe it or not, Mr. Casey, that was me 50 years ago.
You know, I figured it was.
Honest?
Yeah.
Now I'm all wrinkled and shrunk up.
Oh, no, indeed. Your face still has the nice lines of the girls in this picture.
Oh, you're just kidding. But it's nice of you to do it.
Oh, really? I'm not kidding.
My husband, John, used to say pretty things like that. John's been dead now for 14 years.
Tell us about yourself and your husband, Mrs. Myers.
Well, I probably don't look like much to you now, but John and me was once somebody's.
Oh.
You never heard of Maggie Garland?
Well, no, I...
Oh, of course you didn't. Maggie Garland was my stage name back in your grandfather's days.
You were an actress, eh?
Dramatic soubrette. I wasn't a very good one, I guess, but I looked real good in tights. My husband was a real soap somebody, though.
What did he do?
John Rodney Myers was educated. He wrote a book.
A book, yeah? Yeah,
about historical things. There's the book he wrote on my table.
May I look at it?
Yes. But handle it careful. It's old and not very strong, like me.
Well, I'll be careful.
Let me see, Casey. Arms and armor of the Middle Ages.
Oh, he was an authority on such things. Colleges and museums used to ask for his opinion. He knew all about battle axes and swords, and newspapers and magazines used to mention his name and mine, too. You might mention that when you write your piece, young woman.
I will, Mrs. Myers.
It's very interesting.
Oh, here's that dratted captain back again.
Now, Mrs. Myers, don't you know of any big or very strong people who are associated with Miss Patrick?
Well, I don't know if you'd call my next-door neighbor associated with her, but I know he's been bothering her.
How was he bothering her?
Well, Sam Mulvey will bother anything that wears skirts, especially when he's drunk.
Yeah, the guy's a wolf, huh?
Sam Mulvey's what I call a masher. It made Lena Glashheimer mad as all get out when Sam took a shine to Miss Patrick.
Mm-hmm. What was Lena Glashheimer mad about?
She was jealous. She wants to marry Sam Mulvey.
You're finally telling me something that may help my investigation.
Have you looked into a suitcase yet?
No, but I've got it here. Also the key. My man found it in the dead woman's purse.
Let's open it up.
Yeah, I am.
Only a few papers in there.
We'll see what they're... Casey.
Hey, I've seen papers like that one before.
It's a parolee's discharge from Avon Prison.
The name of Alice Patrick Ives.
Alice Ives?
Say, she's the dame who murdered
that... Oh, I know.
The parole board let her out last fall after she'd served 20 years of a life sentence.
What are you saying? Miss Patrick, my lodger, was a murderess?
I bet she was. She carved up a guy named Clem Shirley. Who was a big-time rum runner back in Prohibition days, Mrs. Myers.
And now she's been killed with a knife.
Oh, Casey, this is finally beginning to look like front page.
I'll say it is. We can resurrect the whole story of the Shirley murder, Alice Ives' trial, her 20 years in prison, everything.
I never would have dreamed. Now I can imagine why she was afraid of that man.
The man?
What man?
The mysterious man.
Oh, Mrs. Myers.
Lady, will you please talk straight?
She told me if this man ever came to the house, I was to say she didn't live here. She described him to me. And one day he did come. I seen him watching the house.
And when I told her, she liked to die of fright.
Now you tell me about this.
Well, you didn't ask me about the mysterious man before.
Oh.
Of course, now I figure he was a detective who was watching her.
Mrs. Myers, let me figure it.
Hold it, pal. Wait a minute. Mrs. Myers, will you describe the mysterious man to us? Of
course I will, boy. He was a big, gray-haired fellow with a little black mustache. Oh, and a long scar on his left cheek.
A scar?
Well, she's described Pete Shirley.
The brother of the rat that Alice Ives killed.
He's paid that dame off for knifing his brother.
Oh, Casey, this will be a story. And you'll be in it, too, Mrs. Myers, as the star witness.
Put on your hat and coat, Mrs. Myers. We're going to headquarters where you can look at Pete Shirley's picture. And if you identify him, this case will be all washed up.
All right, the first portion of KC Crime Photographer. We'll get back to it in a few minutes here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Roger Badish. All right, it is 1:36 in the morning. We're tuning into KC Crime Photographer with the mysterious lodger from 1947. Here's the conclusion.
The picture of the man I saw, Captain. The man Miss Patrick was afraid of.
Sergeant Flanagan, get out a pickup order on Scarface Pete Shirley. Have him brought in here and quick.
Yes, sir.
Boys, we've got Pete Shirley, Captain.
Well, Sergeant.
Hey, that's quick work, Flanagan.
Want a cup of water?
Bring him in here.
I don't think you like him in your private office the way he is, Captain.
What do you mean? Well,
Pete is shot up pretty bad. He's dead.
Dead?
Dead. He got killed trying to pull a hold-up last night, Captain. And he was pulling that hold-up over in Woodsfield at the very time Alice Ives was being stabbed here.
You're sure?
The boys just brought him into the morgue, sir.
There goes my case against Pete Shirley.
And my beautifully corny story about a brother's revenge.
Hmm. The death of Mrs. Myers' lodger is becoming a mystery after all.
Got one of those drinking pelicans back at the bar now, and I don't want any more. I'm sorry, try me again sometime. I always hate to turn them salesmen down, Casey, but as my sister Edna says, quote, them as buys everything from everybody pretty soon ain't able to buy nothing from nobody.
Unquote.
Yeah. Besides, my neck gets tired watching the darn thing. Now, what was we talking about before that guy come in?
I wasn't talking about anything, Ethelbert. I was sitting here quietly trying to dope out the fifth race.
Drinking pelicans.
What, in the fifth? Oh, now about?
I remember that old Mrs. Myers, the star witness in that Alice Patrick Ives murder. She's quite a character, according to the stories you've been writing, Miss Williams.
She is quite a character, Ethelbert.
Hmm.
The poor little thing, she's been terribly lonely. All this excitement, her picture in the paper, cops around the place, neighbors dropping in to hear her talk. You know it's given her a new lease on life.
You know, she's a cute old gal. She'll talk your ear off, she gets the chance, but you can't help but like her.
Yeah, sounds like my sister. You know, Casey, she talks all the time.
Yeah. She's the one that's not married.
Yeah. Say, what's new on the murder of that Alice Patrick Ives dame?
Ethelbert, you read the Express, don't you?
Oh, I mean inside stuff.
Oh. Not a thing, Ethelbert. The only case Logan had blew up when it was proven that Pete Shirley couldn't have done the job.
Well, how about that neighbor, the big guy who tried to make a play for the dead gal? Before she was dead, I mean.
Sam Mulvey?
Yeah.
Well, Logan's still suspicious of him, but Mulvey didn't have sufficient motive for my dough.
He's notorious in the neighborhood for a nasty temper, Casey, and he's a heavy drinker.
Yeah.
Also, he's more than strong enough to have driven a knife through that woman's body.
Yeah. I wonder why the handle of that knife was roughened at the end.
Roughened?
Yeah, like somebody had run a coarse file across it.
Well, it wasn't a new knife. Probably been kicked around in a workshop or somebody's kitchen.
I guess so.
No luck in tracing the knife, huh?
Nah, not a bit.
The Ives dame was in prison a long time. Don't you figure she might have made an enemy there who bumped her off?
Well, Logan's checking on that theory, pal. You know, that window being locked 2 inches from the bottom, that bothers me.
Well, now, why?
Well, why should the killer take the time to do that? Nobody was likely to notice whether that window was closed or open. And after the killer made his getaway, it didn't matter. There was no darn reason for that window. Hey, there's always a reason for everything.
Hmm?
Excuse me, Annie. I'll see you later.
Where are you going?
I'm going to take a walk and think.
Casey, I'm delighted to see you.
Thanks, Mrs. Myers.
And be sure and wipe your feet on the mat.
Yes, I remember.
Come in the parlor and sit, if you don't mind us. Some of my neighbors was in, and they wanted to hear firsthand about poor Miss Patrick. They just left, and I ain't had time to clear up the tea things we used. Oh, can I give you a cup of tea?
Tea? Oh, no, thank you. No.
It won't take but a minute.
Tea just isn't my dish.
I'll make you coffee.
I can get along without coffee, too.
Oh, young fella, I haven't got anything else.
Mrs. Myers, I came here for a talk, not a drink.
Oh, that's fine. I like to talk.
You like to have people want to talk to you,
too.
Oh,
I guess everybody wants that.
Yes, especially persons who were once somebody, as you were.
Oh, I was never much. Just an actress without much talent, but my husband was really the somebody.
Yeah, indeed he was. I stopped at the public library this afternoon and looked over his book, Arms and Armor of the Middle Ages.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm. I'm afraid it was a little over my head,
though. It was interesting, don't you think?
Yes, it gave me an idea. I guess it gave you one, too.
What? I don't know what you mean.
You killed Alice Patrick Ives.
Of course, you're joking.
No. No, Mrs. Myers.
Young man, I weigh just 91 pounds in my heaviest coat and winter galoshes. Are you saying I drove a knife completely through that big woman?
Uh-huh. And you did it from outside of her locked window.
How could I do that?
With one of the medieval weapons your husband wrote about, the kind he says could throw an arrow or a spear or a knife with accuracy, silence, and great force? The window was open 2 inches. The knife was shot through that opening.
Mm.
You figured you were creating really a great mystery, huh? A woman stabbed in the back in a completely locked room. That appeal to the dramatic instinct an actress never loses.
You're pretty smart, young man. You know, I never figured that window could be shut and locked from the outside the way you said. You kind of spoiled the mystery.
You admit you killed Miss Patrick?
Oh, of course I don't. I'm just talking. It's nice to talk, even on a crazy subject. Why, in your opinion, did I kill that woman?
Well, I guess in order to get attention. Hmm? The attention you've been without for years.
Oh, I have been very lonesome. I've wanted folks to notice me again, but do you think that's a good enough motive for what you say I've done?
Well, it wouldn't have been for you if you hadn't learned your mysterious lodger was a freed murderess. After you found that out, probably by getting into the locked suitcase and seeing her parole papers, you considered her life of no value at all.
She was a bad woman. I went to the library and got old newspapers and read up about her case.
And that's how you found out about Scarface Pete Shirley, the brother of the guy she killed.
Mm-hmm. I even come across some pictures of him.
He never came here looking for Miss Patrick, as you said.
No, but that seemed a good story to tell the cops.
Yeah. Well, I guess you're ready now to tell the true story to the cops, Mrs. Myers, huh?
There ain't been much in the papers about me during the last couple of days. And next week there wouldn't be anything, maybe. And folks would stop calling on me and I'd be alone again. By me telling the cops, I won't be forgotten so quick. And you'll put more pictures of me in the paper, son?
Yes, indeed.
We'll go down to headquarters right now. Darn good idea you've given me, young fella. I'll get my coat.
Hey, wait a minute.
Huh?
What do you mean? That I've given you a good idea?
You understand English, don't you?
Say, look here, wait a minute. Am I wrong about this? Did you kill that woman?
For all your smartness, you don't know a thing.
I don't.
Well, do you?
No,
I'll get my coat and bonnet.
Say, Mrs. Myers, if you're not really guilty, if you're going to confess to something you didn't do, hey, wait a minute, you can't do that.
I can't hear you.
I say you can't do that.
Wait till I get back to the parlor. Now, what did you say I couldn't do?
What's that in your hands?
The thing that killed Miss Patrick.
But you got it pointed at me.
That's right. I'm going to let you have it now.
There's nothing I can do to stop you, I guess.
Of course there ain't. Here, take the darn things out of my hands.
What?
It's heavy.
You're letting me have it.
It's the evidence you needed. You didn't have none before.
Mrs. Myers, I...
Fooled you, didn't I?
Yeah, you sure did.
I can fool folks right away. Bet I get you guessing again before we're through.
Surveys show that housewives, almost without exception, prefer to buy foods and other household products packed in glass containers. Their reasons are many and varied, but chief among them are five important facts. One, glass containers have no effect on the taste of the food they contain. Two, glass containers let you see exactly what you buy before you buy it. Three, glass containers are so attractive that condiments can be served on the table in the original container. Four, glass containers are easy to open. And five, glass containers can be safely resealed to store leftovers. The better brands of foods are again available in clean, sparkling glass containers. Most of them in Anchor glass containers protected by Anchor vacuum caps. Both products of Anchor Hocking. A great name in glass.
What was the gadget Mrs. Myers had that shoots knives, Casey?
It was an old crossbow, Ethelbert.
Crossbow?
That's right.
It's not like the longbows used by Robin Hood and the American Indian.
Well, the principle is the same, but it's different, Annie. See, this gimmick is a short bow set across a hunk of wood that looks like a rifle stock. It was made to shoot short arrows, or bolts, as they were called. The thing is an antique that Mrs. Myers' husband picked up someplace.
I see. Poor old lady. So lonesome she committed murder to get attention. What'll be done with her?
Well, she's in an institution, Ethelbert, where she'll be perfectly happy because attention is something she's sure to get for the rest of her life.
Out of her mind, huh?
Yeah, so the docs say, in the legal definition.
Poor old lady.
Think of the poor doctors and nurses. I wonder what you'll pull on them.
Annie, I wish I was sure of what she's already pulled.
What do you mean?
I'm never going to be sure that she used that crossbow. That she really is a murderess. I'll never be sure that she hasn't played me for a chump to get what she wanted.
The death of the mysterious lodger is still a mystery, maybe?
Ethelbert, I don't think so, but... Oh, nuts. Let's see what's good in the fifth. Give me that thing.
Crime Photographer, starring Stotz Cotsworth as Casey, is brought to you each Thursday by the Anchor Hocking Glass Corporation, makers of Fire King Oven Glass, Anchor Glass Containers, Anchor Caps and Closures, all products of the Anchor Hocking Glass Corporation. A great name in glass. Photographer is directed by John Deese. The original music is by Archie Blyer, and the program features Miss Leslie Woods as Anne and John Gibson as Ethelbert. The part of Maggie Myers was played by Miss Eva Condon. Thursday night on CBS is the biggest show in town, so stay tuned for exciting dramatizations on Reader's Digest Radio Edition, which follows immediately over most of these stations. The Red Cross carries on for veterans, for military hospitals, and for all communities in time of disaster. You can help by giving generously now. And this is Tony Marvin saying good night for the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation, the world's largest maker of household glass. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's Casey, crime photographer from March 6, 1947, The Mysterious Lodger, starring Stotts Cotsworth. Now, there's a name, Stotts Cotsworth. Huh?
That's a great name.
Stotts.
A memorable
S-T-A-A-T-S.
Name. Yep.
Cotsworth. And then he played Casey. Leslie Woods, who played Mary Wesley on Boston Blackie. She's playing Annie Williams here, his girlfriend. She was always the girlfriend, Leslie Woods. She just made a career out of being the girlfriend on these detective shows.
Typecast.
This was a New York production. So There was a whole bunch of actors on the East Coast and a whole bunch of actors on the West Coast. Now, there were some radio shows that came out of Chicago and came out of also out of Detroit, some shows. Not that many, very few, just a handful. Most of the shows came out of L.A. So you had guys like William Conrad, Parley Bear, and Harry Bartell, and you know, Hans Conried, Gail Gordon, these kind of people, they were all on the West Coast. You know, just tons of them. But then you had a certain group of actors like Leslie Woods and Arnold Moss and Lawson Zerbe, Ralph Bell, Mason Adams. These actors were all on the East Coast. And just when I look at the casts, I could always tell, you know, whether they were broadcast, originated out of New York or L.A., and this particular one with John Gibson, Stotts Cotsworth, Leslie Woods, those were all East Coast actors, and very, very few of them ever made the trips. You know, like some, I mean, a few, like William Johnstone, he played The Shadow for a while. He was Lamont Cranston, The Shadow. He was on the East Coast. But then, after The Shadow in, like, mid-1940s, he moved to L.A., and he was on all the L.A. shows, you know? So, but very few actors did that, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just stayed put, you know? They kind of stayed put. Like, you're a Chicago actress, that's it. You love Chicago, you're going to be an actress in Chicago. You're going to win your Academy Award.
You know, I could be
TV.
Persuaded.
you're going to win your Academy Award in a movie that you do
right
out of.
Right here in Chicago.
Yeah, and your Emmy.
Exactly.
For TV, right.
With
here.
With the EGOT, the Emmy, the Grammy, the Oscar, the Tony.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be great,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we're working
All
on
right.
that.
All right, that's Casey, crime photographer. Hope you enjoyed that.